Now I'm talking to Dan Keating at his home. Dan, first of all, tell us, when is your birthday and how many years are you going to be?
I'll be 100 years on the 2nd day of January 1902, next year now, you're not quite close to it, 2 weeks' time. I was born in, quite near here, and the name of the townland is Listening Owl, Castlemaine. And went to school in the local school in Belvanan for a long number of years. And after that, I spent a time in the Christian Brothers in Tralee, short time, and not very long. And I went in serving my apprenticeship to Baron Grocery in Jerry McSweeney's, 32 Castle Street, Tralee. I was there for about 3 years when the trouble began at its height at the time, and there was a policeman who was a local man, but he was gathering some information, asking questions in another pub quite near anyone. They got to the people that in command, and they killed him in the pub, and the pub was burned. But the finger was placed firmly on some of the locals and all that, and we had to go on the run right away. And in the course of time, anyway, we got over that period for a long time. But when the Civil War was at its height, I was in Limerick. And I was dispatched to Tipperary to bring home a column that was led by Jerry Miles, who was after Secretary of the Kerry County Board. A scout anyway came to us. He was to lead us anyway. They were to come home and to hold the fort in Kilmallock. But he was leading us along anyway, and what he was doing, he was leading us into Trap and did. We were all captured, conveyed to Mountjoy, or not to Mountjoy, to Port Leash prison, and was there for about 7 months. We burned the jail, and it was a bad job because we had to sleep in the rough, and then the end was rough. And in the spring anyway, we were carted off to Tin Pert internment camp in the Curragh.
Where football was prominent.
Oh, football, there was great footballers there from every county. You had the Bradys of Leash, Larry and Tom, they were famous men. Each one was about 6'4". You had Spillan from Tipperary, and there was another man that played for, I can't recall his name now, he was from Nina, but he was a great footballer. He won a lot, he always played in the Kerry team, the New York team that came to Ireland and played with him. Joe Barrett, Rory O'Connell, there were two anyway, and
have your own games then?
Oh, every hut had their own team. In the team that I was in, when we went into the hut, it was half occupied before us with loud men, and the loud men, they were the mainstay of our hut. You had the Lawlesses, Willie and his brother Johnny Green, George Fitzsimons, and some others, great footballers. And actually Willie Lawless, now he won Railway Cup medals with Leinster after. Actually, Then again, they broke up then, and a lot of the men were sent to Hare Park. And they included Joe Barrett, Matthew Galvin, Gail Slattery, Rory Connell, and some others. Oh, the tax part, tax, and from.
What age were you then?
That would be year 22, I'd be 20 years. Yeah, 22 years.
Then what are your earliest memories now that you can go back, as far as you can go back in the last century now? What's your earliest memories and growing up around here?
Oh, well, growing up around, and in Tralee, it was always great, and you were always, the sports field was open to us at the time there, you know. The sports field at the time was the property of John Mitchell, and everyone was at the sport. But football at the time was going through a bad spell, because a great Kerry team, who were aged, were beaten in 1919 by Galway, and in a replay. And on the day now, it was John Joe Sheehy against a lot of the rest of them were old, and they failed. And that was the end, more or less the end of that Kerry team.
Dan, what are your earliest memories now of going to a football match and seeing football played the first time?
Well, the first All-Ireland at this time, I was after getting a job in Dublin at the time. And my first All-Ireland to see was the team that beat Kerry, Galway. They were firm favourites to beat Kildare in 1919. And Kildare, with the great Larry Stanley, Mick Buckley, and some of them that won a couple of All-Irelands after against Kerry. On the day they were young, on the 19th, they destroyed Galway. And I suppose we were disappointed that Galway didn't win it when they beat Kerry, but it was a great Kildare team. When we came out of the jails then in 1923, you had a great Kerry team, young, coming up, and you had men that were in jail like Reardon, Barrett, Bill Landers, Gail Slattery, Paddy Clifford, and others, you know. The internees, as they called them, played the Kerry team, and the Kerry team beat them. But the Kerry team, there were some men still in jail this time. So when the full lot came out, they decided to have another match. And the internees destroyed the Kerry team. And the thing then was to bridge the gap. And there's no doubt the people that were responsible for bridging the gap between Free Staters and Republicans would be then Joe Bailey, Con Brusnan, who was an officer in the Free State Army, John Joe Sheehy, and these anyway.
What did they do to bridge the gap then?
Well, Brusnan was an awful man, you know, in his own way. Brusnan, he thought nothing about football, and he was never a real Free Stater. First of all, you would prove that after. But Brusnan, anyway, when they were going into match, he demanded that she was still in the run, that she would be not interfered when he was playing for Kerry. And that, from that on, anyway, the bridges were built, you know. And as well as that, the vast majority, with very few exceptions now, two or three at the most, joined the Free State Army. There was no finger could be pointed at them that they'd done anything dirty. The Horden, even Horden at the time, now he was more or less in charge of the Kerrymen, and he had people under him like Cronin, Conbrusten, and all these. They never done. It was never known they'd done anything dirty in their lives, you know. And the Free State government, actually, the man that was in charge in Tralee here at the time, I think he was a clear man. And he demanded that the Kerry team, the Kerrymen, the Free State should be taken some other fashion. Yeah, he maintained that they weren't doing what they should do. Most people should name.
And they settled down into Farham, that great Kerry team then. Talk to us about that period.
Farham, the great Cupra team, and the first All-Ireland that they played, there was two All-Irelands played in the year 1924. In the first one, Kerry beat Dublin now against the run of play. The Dublin were an aging team at the time too. Now, to be fair, you know, they were a great team early on. You had four Sinnots, two McDonalds, two Norrises. My God, they were great. The Norrises now were actually meatmen. And Kevin was from Cabin. But they beat Kerry by 2 points. Actually, there was two incidents turned the game. First of all, Bill Landis got a blatant push in the back. Everyone saw it, only the referee, and they got away with it. And Kerwin won a square ball and then scored a goal, and they were beaten in that. So it was back anyway again later on the year in September. The same again, the same team again. And it was a wonderful game of football. And it was I think it was the lowest score at the finish ever decided in a final, an All-Ireland final. Kerry won by 4-3. That would be the 24.
By the way, before we keep talking, how many All-Ireland finals have you seen then?
154, only in football. How I got into hurling, I was based early in 19. I was based in Limerick for a number of years, and I got very friendly there with the Young Ireland and the Young Ireland Club and the commercials. They were more or less the one. They were drawn from the one type of people, you know. And Dinny Lanigan at the time and Tim Humphries, I was very great with him. Actually, I represented the commercials at the county board at the time. And we were very, I started going to the finals with him. As well as that, I knew Jim Hurley in the camp where I was in prison, you know. Jim Hurley came from Clonakilty. But he played his hurling with the Rockies, and he won 5 All-Ireland medals.
And of course, you left Kerry to go to Dublin. What year did you leave Kerry, and what was your occupation then in Dublin then?
After a number of years, then I went to Dublin, and I was sent to London, to Mooney's, as a barman, yes. When the war came on, I was home again, and I got going in Dublin then, and I was based in Clontarf Park. I bought a house. I was married that time. Well, my wife is dead 23 years, but we were based in Clontarf Park, and I had only to walk down the road to that, but I was always able to get tickets, and I saw every All-Ireland football and hurling from that on.
Now then, take us back again to where we left off with the great Kerry team. That was in the 20s.
Yeah.
Now bring us up along the 30s then.
Yeah. Well, that great Kerry team, they won in 24. They, in 25, they were put out as champion by an objection from Kevin. And Kevin were put out on a counter objection. But still, Kerry lost that year. In 1926, then, they played this great Kildare team again, led by Stanley McBuckley. These, they were received, Jack Higgins, and then they had the famous half Joe Curtis, Martin, Paul Dyle. Three soldiers, but three great footballers. Jack, if I remember right, you know, I think Jack Higgins, the great centre half back, was the captain. But Kerry were up against it. I'd say there was more fire in Kerry, and I'd say in that final, slightly more skill in Kildare. But Kerry, anyway, after a drawn game, they won the final by a goal. Tommy Mahoney.
And then, to my knowledge, that was the first time that Dr. Raymond O'Sullivan appeared on the scene. Talk to me about that man. That was the first time. He was only 22 years old when he started.
Well, of course, he was based in Killarney at the time. And he was a great man for getting men physically fit, you know. And he always wanted if the skills were in him, fitness was the next greatest thing, but oh, he had a great run with him, you know. Then he had great respect from the players. If the players respect you, it's half the battle. Yeah. In after 1926, Kerry suffered through immigration. First of all, the great Johnny Murphy died. He got meningitis, I think, and he died pretty quickly.
He's the Castlevine man, now.
Yes. Phil Sullivan went to America. Gal Slattery went to America. Paul Rutt declared for Dublin. Bill Anders went to America. Marcy Yalman went to America. Half the team went to America when left him. And in the next two, Kildare won the next two All-Irelands, and in each case by a narrow score. And Kerry were building. And then in 1929, the breakthrough came. You had the Landers.
Then, before you talk about the breakthrough, that immigration that I know, were things very bad in the county? Were conditions bad? Was employment bad? Why did those men immigrate?
Phil Sullivan hadn't immigrated. He was a teacher now and had a job. But he got into trouble with neighbours and everything. He was a Kinmare man living in Ballymacallagate, and he wasn't wanted in the school in plain language. And anyway, they trumped up charges even against him, which were absolutely untrue now. But the rest of the people, like Paddy Clifford, Gal Slattery, and all them, there was no job or nothing for them, you know. They had to do it. But in the meantime, anyway, this other team arrived, you know, with the Landers. Duffy almost destroyed the Gaelic Athletic Association, you know. He was a great Gaelic man himself, but he could carry the. But you had Russell Beck and Joe Sullivan, who was a university man, had arrived on the scene, and you had a number of the younger players that came along. Like, actually, one of the at the time now, of course, Barrett was playing great football, and Rory Connell and the Landers, and you had Mike O'Doyle. Mike O'Doyle had won 4 All-Ireland medals before his 21st birthday. He was a marvelous footballer. He was a marvelous footballer and could play anywhere.
What about Paul Russell?
Russell was a great wing-back, no doubt, but he liked to go forward all the time, and he was always good even for a few points. Actually, on one particular day now, in a semi-final, Dublin, this was in the, when they were good in the 30s, Dublin had them on the rack. They were leading by a goal, and Russell let fly a drop kick from, I'd say, 60 yards, and it skidded off the ground and into the net, a draw. And Kerry destroyed him in Tralee.
What about Dick Fitzgerald?
Oh, well, of course, Fitzgerald, I suppose. Well, I didn't see him at his best, you know. But he won 5 All-Ireland medals. He was a marvelous footballer. Oh, I did, yes. A big man and a great footballer, 2 great feet. Yes. At that time now, I didn't see so much of them now. I suppose I was too young, you know, but it was a strange thing. All the full back line and the half back line were Tralee, and 4 of the forwards were from Killarney, and 2 from Tralee. Well, one of them wasn't actually from Tralee. He was Rice from Abidorney.
What were the conditions like then, going to matches in Croke Park that time, in relation to the crowds, and what were things like in Croke Park? Talk to me about the scene of an All-Ireland.
Yes. Well, of course, Croke Park, at the outset, you stood in the terraces, you know, on 24 and that, you know, and gradually it came a bit better, and you had the sideline seats then, you know, which were, there was 3 rows of seats, and no stand. That was before the Hogan stand. And going to the match, it was great, of course. The train would leave Tralee, about, it was called the ghost train, to leave Tralee, and it'd stop at every station, and stop at places that weren't stations at all. But you usually arrived in Kingsbridge about 6:30, and all the crowd off the train straight down the city and into the churches, past anyway. And there was a couple of famous restaurants around the centre of the city at the time. Then you would see Moore and Garner's Row, and they'd have a good meal before they go to the mat, but they'd be gone in time.
But there was very few, of course, there was no such thing as everybody wearing jerseys, or there was no big flags, or things were different than they are today then.
Oh, yes, well, in dim years, you know, now, when Kerry team got going good, there was 2 men from Tralee. Mickey Dunn, he was a famous violist now, and a lock and accordionist. And they'd have a long car to meet him, and they'd play him up to Barry's Hotel. Yeah.
What was the homecoming like then?
The homecoming, they weren't, it was special. You were in Mallor. Mallor was famous. There was a reception party in Mallor, now Cork. Did surprise you. But they were there, and from that on, you'd see bonfires, nothing else, everywhere you'd go. Oh, Killarney, the same. Great reception in Killarney. But when they come to Tralee, then they were mobbed.
There was a family in Killarney that all did know then, the Lines of Creaney. Mickey Lyon and Jackie Lyon. Yeah, talk to me about those people.
Yeah. Well, Mickey Lyons, he was the first man to win in All-Ireland on the Lions now. Mickey was a priest after in Glasgow. And you had Dinny only died there some weeks ago. And Jackie died young. They were, oh God, they were great footballers. How did they, Jackie, I suppose, Jackie, it must be said that Jackie was the best. Mickey wasn't there long enough because he was ordained and he was located to Glasgow. Then you had the three Landers brothers that played together in a team. Yeah, you had Purty, Roundy and Bill. They were marvellous footballers. They were full of skill. You'd like to see them when they got going. I suppose must be said that in the 1937 final, you know, at, against Cavan, John Joe Landers in both games gave an exhibition that can never be equaled. At the time, then you had Michael and Roundy. Roundy was a grand footballer too.
How good was John Joe Sheehy?
Oh, Sheehy was a great footballer. No doubt. Well, Sheehy never started football about 1918, you know. He was fairly young at the time. He was a great footballer. He was the mainstay now of John Mitchell's at that time. But he spent at least 3 years in the run, you know. But when he came back again, and yeah, he played great football. Oh, he had a great head. But he had one failing, that if there was a fella, one of the forwards, not scoring and doing badly, he'd go out of his way when he could get a score himself to try to get that fella into the game. He was an up man that way. He was a great team man.
There was a small man from Killarney, his name was Timmy Leary. He played a share of football, he won it with Kerry. Small little fella, talk to me about him.
And yes, Leary, he was a great footballer. And he played against Cavan in 1937. I think he got two goals that day. He was one of that great Kerry Putty that time brought him into the game, you know. And in the drawn game now, Jesus, Kevin, although Putty, Landers scored two early goals and everything, the Kevin whittled it away and had scored what they thought was a winning point, but the whistle had been blown by the referee, was Tom Cullahan. He was from Limerick, yeah. And in the replay, anyway, Kerry simply destroyed him. O'Leary, Christ O'Leary, and all the forwards were great. They cut holes through the Cavan men that day.
Dan, were you at that game when the whistle went before when the ball was going over the bar? What's your memories?
I left the field believing that Cavan had won. Because only when we came down to the hotel sometime after, we found out that was a draw.
Now, we came along then, and a new batch of men came on the scene, led by Paddy Kennedy and Paddy Bourne and all those people. Now, they were a new era now. What are your memories of those great men and Dan O'Keefe?
They came in 1937. O'Keefe was old that time, enough, you know, he was season, because he had played in 31 and 2. And he was a good keeper for a few years, but I think he stayed maybe a bit too long. Kerry were very lucky in 1946 with O'Keefe, you know, because No doubt Roscommon scored another goal they didn't get in the Down game. But Kerry did win the replay. They won it by Paddy Burke, 4 points. That was a great Kerry. I'd say their three backs there that time, you know, they were the best. Cahan was a great, good footballer, very good. Pike Healy was brilliant, right back. And the other man from Killarney, oh Christ, Miles, he got killed back there, all there. They were a wonderful backline.
Now, I must ask you, as I ask everybody, about Paddy Kennedy. Now, talk to me about that man and compare him, of course, with Mick O'Connor, as everybody does.
Paddy Kennedy, oh God, he was a very talented footballer, very skillful, fine field and everything. And then again, he had a very able deputy with him, Sean Brusson. Equally good. Not as good as Kennedy, not as classy, you know. But Kennedy was something special, but very prone to injuries. He was a great footballer. You see, Kerry were blessed with great midfielders. In the old days, they had Pat O'Shea and Murphy's. And after that, they had Con Brusson and Bob Stack, Kennedy and Brusson, down along, Jack Shea, Sean Welsh, and that, what do you call that man from Gina Gwilla? Ambrose Donovan, yeah. One of them were great footballers, but you could never, I suppose it should be unfair, you could never say one was better than them.
Why do you think then that Kerry keep producing good midfielders? What's the secret of Kerry football then?
I don't know what it is, but I don't know. They say up to recent years there seem to be John Dowling came and O'Shea. Two great footballers again came from nowhere.
We came up along then to the 50s.
Meet the Striders in 54. Beat us by 6 points. The following year we won it again. Beat Dublin. You know? And then how Meet beat a great Kerry team. It's very hard to explain.
But there was a bit of trouble in the county at that time, wasn't there? Jackie Lyon was dropped for the Meet game. And there was a bit of trouble over the captaincy too.
Right, yes. Then things do have an effect. For instance, you could say it had an effect this year. No, I have no doubt. I have no look. To take that amount of, it doesn't have to be the man, the club that win the championship, that name that he meet on that and then destroy themselves. Yeah.
And then, of course, as you said, then in 53 they beat Armagh, in 55 they beat Dublin. What are your memories of those games?
I always remember the game against Armagh. That was played, it was a beautiful day, and it was some game of football. And there's no doubt that it was tough and go. And Kerry, leading by a couple of points, when Armagh got a penalty. And the man that took it now, great footballer. The man that took the footballer, dropped it wide. And it certainly, I'd say it killed off Roscommon. Kerry won by 3 or 4, but it was some game of football.
And then they were beaten by Meath, and then 55 then. Now that was the big game, wasn't it?
Oh yeah. That was the game. They were expected to lose that game again, and they walked it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. In them years, they turned out some great ballers too, you know. if you had a good selection committee, they had the players and then the talented youth, but there was always some backing, you know, there was someone biting from the back. The selection committee didn't agree with among themselves on anything. And the late Mark Kelly, God rest him now, he had an obsession to win in our legend without a Tralee man, you know. And it certainly affected, because here's your great footballers in Tralee the same. Actually, no. He was responsible in an Ireland for dropping Paddy Sheehy. You know that, don't you? Yeah? Yeah? That's right.
We came up the line, didn't we? O'Connell came on the scene then, and Mick Dwyer and Johnny Cullity and Jerome O'Shea and talk to me about those men then.
Well, of course, although that full back nine was Murphy, I think, the army man, I forget the army man's name now. Ed Roach, yes, and them, they were always suspect, you know. And then again, they had blown up some of the footballers, something that they weren't. For instance, Kevin Coffey had a great press, nothing like him. And the night before Dáil Éireann, there was the game that they had played previously by Sean, and he collapsed at the game. Then he was gone. And they played him the following day, and the big fellow McCartan destroyed him. Yeah.
How was it they could never beat Down then?
Well, first of all, the team wasn't picked that would beat Down. There was great footballers in Kerry that could stand up and play their game with them, you know. But they weren't selected. And secondly, Down were 3 points up with any referee before they started. There was an obsession to have Down win our legends, which is all wrong, because Down, they were never real Gaelic men. They played the game now, but they weren't real Gaelic men at all. They weren't like Armagh, Derry, or any other counties in the north. You know, there was something about them that you couldn't like in plain language.
Now, Mick O'Connell, you've seen all the great players over the last 100 years nearly. How would you rate Mico, and talk to me what time of a player you thought he was?
Mick O'Connell was a marvellous footballer. He was all skill, and he had everything going for him. But a couple of bad decisions, which he often got, would put him off his game. There was players reckoned that they beat him that weren't in his class at all, you know, but it just wasn't his day. And even on one occasion he walked off the field and they had to rush him back again. Yeah.
How would he rate then in the line of all the great players you saw?
I mean, he was up with the best of them. I told you now that the midfielders now, like Brosnan and Stack and Kennedy and Brosnan and all them down along, you'd have to rate Michael Connell alongside any one of them.
Now, another man I must ask you about, he's a good friend of mine. He won an All-Ireland medal out the field, and he won 4 of them in goal, is Johnny Cullity.
Oh, Johnny Cullity, well, of course, he was a goalkeeper for a time too. Johnny, he was a great opportunist, and a great man to read a game. a good goalie. Oh, God, a good footballer. I mean, a good footballer can be a good goalie too, of course, you know, if he has the ability and the agility, you know. We were always blessed with good goalkeepers. I suppose there's hardly any doubt, though, that Charlie Nelligan, you'd have to say, was the best of them. He won 7 All-Ireland medals, and he had a marvellous kick out, which is an asset.
Now, of course, he was the part of the great Kerry team from 75 on, this great team now. What are your memories of those teams in the 70s up along and Mick Dwyer?
Oh, they were special. They were a great team, you know. And they were all there together at the time, you know. And you had Paddy, Kennelly, and Lynch. They were the best in the business, there's no doubt about that. Kennelly, he had a nickname, I think, the horse or something they used to call him. But gee, they were marvelous footballers. And then you had Power. Power, I suppose, ever heard of Power? He was one of the best wing forwards ever, you know. His speed was something terrible. Some fellows would think they were before him, the next thing he was gone. How he kept going, I don't know, for so long. He was a marvellous footballer. And then you had Egan, the bomber, and she. They were the best in the business. There's no doubt about that.
Were they the best you ever saw?
They were. Definitely the best I ever saw. You know, you had people compared that after with O'Rourke, Stafford, and Flynn. But these crowd won a lot more than they did, you know.
What about Pat Spillane and Mickey Sheehy, and what about Jack O'Shea?
Who? Jack O'Shea was a great footballer. Put a lot in, covered a lot of ground. Pat Spillane, if he only could see another man's day, would be great. He was overrated, as far as I think. You'd have to say that in the game against Offaly, you remember it, you were at it, of course. You remember it. Yes. The three Spillanes contrived that day to beat Kerry. You see, when Offaly got the goal that they shouldn't have got at all, you know, Kerry, they got a run on the ball anyway. And Tom Spillane, anyway, ended up getting the ball and list the whole, I remember like yesterday, the whole awfully back line, they ran in to get the goal. They didn't want the goal. And Liston was isolated. You remember it, I said. And Tom Spillane went for his own shot and double point, and if Liston got the ball, he'd have just done that over the bar.
And we were beaten.
Huh? We were beaten, yeah.
Now, the trainer of that team, of course, was Mick O'Dwyer. Yeah. Now, he also gave great playing service. How was Mick O'Dwyer, in your opinion, as a player and as the trainer?
A great player, and as a trainer, he had his shortcomings. I always regarded Mick Spillane as a joke, and he kept him until he was destroyed, you remember, by Matt Connor. Yeah? I never took him off. Yeah? Just remarkable. The three Spillanes now, on the day, the three were bad. Well, Pat only came on as a sub. If Jean wasn't injured, carried him, won't going away. But then again, the penalty on the day. That penalty should have been taken again. Because at the time, now I remember it like yesterday, at the time, goalkeepers, they should stay in their route until the kick was taken.
For 10 years, as you say, after winning in All-Ireland, why were they, before they won it in 97, why were they down so long, would you think?
You had a bad selection committee and the, and you'd have to ask questions about Sean Kelly, the chairman. I don't know, he put nothing into it. And when it came to 97, then you'd have to say that was a lucky win. I know that you hear me, and I happened to be on the day with Maguire, and when it was over he asked me to sum it up, and I said it was a one man show.
No, it was a one man show, and talk to me about that one man.
Yeah? Well, of course, I suppose.
Maurice Fitzgerald.
You'd have to say on the day now. He, from the word go, he was flying. But so was the man that was knocked out, Billy O'Shea. Billy was flying as well. And they had the run on the Mayo crowd, all right. But then again, you had the collision. And Billy O'Shea, that was knocked out. If it was reversed, and if Maurice Fitzgerald was knocked out, Mayo's have walked it.
Now then, bring us, Maurice was a sub for most of the year, and Kerry came along, and they won the replay against Armagh, they won the replay against Galway, and they had a great game against Cork.
Oh, that's right, yes. Well, of course, I can't understand why, what they had against him, or why they dropped him. I mean, he got no thanks for winning in All-Ireland. As a matter of fact, I think that the powers that be at the top now, that they were bitter that he done it, you know. Then again, of course, he rescued him against Armagh, and he rescued him against any team. Again, he scored. The point he scored there that brought him up with Armagh was as good as ever he ever scored, you know.
How would you rate Maurice Fitzgerald now in the line of all the Kerry forwards that you've seen down through the years?
Good as any. That's my opinion, that he gave great service to Kerry. And then again, when they had nothing, he was great too, you know, but he never got any thanks for what he done.
Now then, looking back now over your 100 years, name off the best Kerry players, the best Kerry players that you have seen.
I tell you, no matter what you think, you had the great fullbacks, you had the great midfielders and everything. They all played in different decades. And you could never say that any one particular Kerry midfielders were better than the other one. Then again, in the fullbacks, Kerry had great fullbacks through the years, you know. Cahan was a very good footballer, but he enjoys his game too much. Barrett was different. Barrett believed that Kerry should win every game and play that way, you know. He won 6 All-Irelands now in the one position. God, there was something special. I'd always have something special for Barrett because he was great.
Who were your favourite footballers down through the 100 years then?
Well, all the same. Of course, I was more or less born and in jail with the Landers and everything like that, you know. And I always thought they were great for, and I had great admiration for Shuey. And afterwards, he'd done a lot for Kerry. And he was a great man for building bridges in 7 Conbrushton, and now they were on 2 opposite sides, but they were great men to build bridges. And it was great credit to him, you know.
What about Tiggy Line?
God, sure, that against Dublin that year. Well, of course, I can't see it the same as yesterday. You know, Tiggy, Christ, he was a great wing forward. He was all football and all skill, and could use the ball well too, you know. No, he was a great footballer.
Now then, you've seen all the different types of football down through the decades since the 20s. What do you think of today's present style of football in comparison to the old style of football, we call it?
Of course, today now, most teams are fitters. But the games between Kerry and Kildare, you know, they're in the mid-30s, that was football at its best, because football at the time, there was no solo runs. Let the ball go and let the best man win it. It was great football.
What do you think of the Gaelic Athletic Association today then? We'd say now in line they're stopping people going onto the field after games, and there's a lot of big buildings going on, and there's a lot of money involved.
That was the start of, they took something very special out of the game for the children that went into the field. For their day, there was never an incident of any description whatever among whether they were adults or children after the game in Croke Park, and they decided that they didn't want to get the trouble of taking up the papers and things after it was rotten. They took something out of it.
Do you think the players should be paid today then?
I don't think so. That'll come in. You place it like Dublin. There's men in Dublin now, a lot of people with a lot of money could pour money into it, you know. And they dominate, you see. We don't want that to happen again. You see, even at the moment, there's a stunt going on. And I hope it don't happen. It happened. Duffy nearly destroyed the GAA when he located, got all the hurlers and football to join up, you know, and based him in Dublin. He nearly destroyed. It was lucky.
Are you still going to matches yourself then?
I was at two All Irelands this year. I wouldn't go again. The last thing that I thought. I have seen them take something out of the GA for years, but when they deleted Rule 21, that was it for me.
Why is that then?
The British forces, they are up in the north of Ireland, holding down part of our country for another country, and until we are at 31 county republic, I'd have no time for them.
Now, going back over your life and going back as far as you can, what world events in the 20s and the early part of the century then? Can you remember, like the sinking of the Titanic and things like that?
Yeah, 1911 and the Titanic was, well, there was even a song about it, you know, going around at the time, that was it. Huh? I had it, yes, I can remember.
What's your favourite song?
I wouldn't say I have any. I like ballads now, good ballads, good Irish ballads.
When you're out now for a night then, what song would you sing?
I don't go for a night.
What song would you sing?
I don't sing at all, you know.
What world events now up along back in the early part of the last century do you remember?
Oh, well, I don't know. I suppose there were things maybe that turned things around, you know. Things in the 30s and 40s, you know, when things weren't going on the island. Player said nothing. And I remember a great footballer in Tralee, and they used to take him up and give him two buns and a cup of coffee, and he played great football. That was the hungry men.
What about the local county championship games now then? What are your memories of those? What was the first county final you saw?
I saw early county finals now between the Mitchells and Killarney and that way, you know. And they were great matches all the years from 1914, and I'd be going to them, you know. They were great matches.
Now, what do you do now? How do you spend your day now at the moment? And what time do you get up, and what do you do for the day? Talk to me about yourself.
I go to bed at 8:30, and I get up at 9:30 in the morning. And I go up and I have a walk in the forest. I used to have the gun up to there last year, you know. I give up the gun then. I have one very bad eye.
What's the name of the forest you walk in?
Ballygamone Forest, just back the road there.
Yeah. And how are you for eating and sleeping and reading then?
I can read with glasses now. The print is fairly good.
When you're talking to me there, you have in your hand a present you're after getting of a book. Talk to me, tell me what it is.
Oh, that's Foggy O'Shea's book, and it's Life with the GAA. It's very factual and very good. Paddy was a great footballer. He never knew how to be beaten, and he was a great wing-back.
Then what does it mean now to be 100 years old? When you look back over 100 years, do you think of your friends and your family?
It's a remarkable thing. I had a grand house in Dublin, Clanter Park. And in 1977, I was persuaded to sell it and come down. I built this house here. I was persuaded anyway to tell him to come down here. It was the worst decision I ever made. Well, I go to Dublin maybe 6 to 7 times in the year now to see matches. And there's particular, I never miss a Dublin and Meath match, because God, there was something special about Dublin. I attended every one of the four in a row. In every one of the games, you'd have to say that Dublin shaded it but didn't win. There was 3 draws. In the final, they were coasting. 3 points up with about 1.5 minutes to go. And they made, I remember it like yesterday, Martin O'Connor stopped a ball that was going wide. And he done a small, which was unusual for O'Connor, he done a small bit of a solo run, and there was about 5 men touched the ball before it came to Tommy Dowd. And Tommy took off, and in the meantime, you had Foley. Foley was going too, and Foley was just outside the square, and they were all concentrated and down, and the next thing he gave the pass, and Foley got the goal. Equal. Dublin were dumbfounded, and John O'Leary, a bad kick out, and it landed with, I forget the Meath fellow's name, Sparky they called him, he had a nickname. Got the ball and put it straight over the bar. 1-4 in a row. Well, that brought, football had been bit dead, you know, after carrying Dublin games, and there was very few good football finals there. But then 4 games brought football back in Dublin and Leinster. No doubt, whatever about it, you know. That was grand now. Meets were ordered on the Wednesday or Thursday, I forget which, that they'd have to play down the following Sunday. churches, if that was Kerry, Dublin, Cork, Galway, Mayo, they'd say no, and they'd get away with it. But Meath fulfilled it, and were beaten, you know, it was a disgrace.
What's the secret of your long life, then?
I don't know, I suppose. Well, I had a regular life, you know, and kept going. And I was lucky, I had great employers. I worked originally for Mooney's. I worked for a spell then for a man, Michael Nugent, an old Dublin footballer. He was a great employer. I went to Newman's, then to the Comet in the Swords Road, and then Newman's were the best employers in the business.
What about your diet? We hear a lot today about you shouldn't be eating butter or drinking milk or things like that.
I don't drink milk, but for years now, what I have in the morning is a bowl of porridge, nothing else. I'd have a good lunch. It could be anything. Usually a lot of maybe bacon, cabbage, and other days I'd have chops, and I'd never dare buy in chops, you know. I changed almost every day. And then in time, then I about six, I'd have one slice of brown bread and a cup of tea in bed before I go to bed. That's it.
So a light diet before you go to bed?
Oh, yeah. Huh? That's it.
Then, looking back again over the years now, are all your friends that you went to school with and that you grew up with and that you knew, are they all dead and buried now?
All my age group now. When I came down here first was Grant Sheehy, he was called here every day, and we go for a drive to Glenbarton. Yeah. John Joe Sheehy. And we go to North Kerry another day, and we kept going around, you know. I was a help to him. We would speak up, man. Dan Mulville in Castlemaine or someone in North Kerry. You know, that was great life, but they all died off.
What do you think of football in Kerry at the moment, then, and how do you think they're going to do in future?
I have watched the minors and school football here for a number of years. And I think that it'll be another 10 years before we win another All-Ireland. Oh, yeah. We have no talent coming. If you can't see talent in the schools, it isn't there, you know.
Then you hear a lot of people talking about Kerry and their tradition and their history and everything, and people say, "What's this? What is the secret of Kerry? What's your definition of that?"
I mean, you have a public in Kerry that they want to win every All-Ireland, you know, and the public wanted, you know, and even this year, you know, oh yeah, it was terrible. By half time, they were leaving the seats and going away from Cove Park. Meet. I predicted this. I said, they won't show our lines, I said, but they met no quality team. And I always predicted that the day they'd meet, they'd know how good they were. Meet them, of course, and destroy themselves because they peaked for the game.
Do you think if we met Meath next year now, then how do you think we do?
Meath and Mike, in my opinion, are gone. Some of them, they're not as good as the old team now, even though they have great. Fair now is definitely the best in the business, you know. And they have, you see, Tommy Dowd is gone now. Even the engine room, the bottom line. Giles is gone. Giles now is after missing a penalty in two All-Irelands. He missed a penalty against Cork, and he missed a penalty last year. grateful policy under that. No man should miss a penalty.
Now, we have a new system now, of course, in the GA, where if you're beaten, you're not out of it, you're back in again.
Yes,
what do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, it's your back door team, won't it, last year, this year? No. No, I think it. I think it has to destroy the Munster final. Munster final, now it is either football or it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, you're sitting in Italian days, it is all wrong.
Then, you're 100 years, the 2nd of January now. What's your earliest memory of being alive? What's the first memories you have of life?
Well, when I was growing up, you know, times were hard, you know. And, well, there was a lot of us there, and it was hard enough to keep the bread and butter on the table. And we got it hard growing up until we were... For instance, I went working at 16, and all my brothers done the same. Huh? Well, my father had a small farm. He used to keep 8 or 9 cows, and that, and he had an American Army pension.
Was he in the American Army? Talk to me about that side of his life. Did he tell you stories about it?
He never said one word about it. Never. No. I said for something he wanted to forget.
Do you follow the sports then?
Huh?
Do you follow the sports?
Oh God, I love to see these Olympics and these games, you know. It is great.
Who would be the best sportsman that you saw in the world then?
I suppose there were some famous athletes now. And the first man, of course, that had come to mind now was Carl Lewis. Yeah? He won 8 Olympic medals, didn't it? Yeah? As an athlete, you know, he was something special.
We had great men in Kerry Langore here. You'd have known about him. The Caseys from Snee.
Oh yeah, all the Caseys, they were great oarsmen now. Oh, they were great. They were... And they went to London and America, and they done very well wherever they went, you know. Oh, they were they were what you call good Irishmen now.
Now we're only a couple of weeks away from Christmas then. Are you looking forward to Christmas?
For a long number of years now, since my wife died, this will be my 24th Christmas in Waterford with my niece.
What's your first memory of Christmas then?
My first memory of Christmas that time, went out with my father to collect the Redbury Holly. The Redbury Holly meant something. And then again, if you went wren hunting and the St. Stephen's Day, if you hadn't a wren on top of the Redbury Holly, you wouldn't be received in any place. It was a shame to kill the poor wrens. And there isn't any of them left today.
Were they happy days?
Huh? Oh, they were. Oh, God, they were very happy. In our young days, they were very happy. And when I was in the 70s, 80s, and that way, we always went to the hall in Farmers Bridge. And it was great enjoyment. It was a great place, yeah, you know. And
then you're sitting back here now. You're as fit as a fiddle, God bless you. What's it like being 100 years of age? Could you tell that to the young people today and the old people?
I don't know. I just was. Well, the people, I'd say a lot of people will live longer now because they're living better, you know, and they're dating better and everything like that. But the worst thing that has happened to people now, and people now that have gone on, I preached to them. If they wanted to go from here now back to the forest to half a mile, they take a car with them. That's wrong.
But when you wake in the morning now then and you get out of bed and do you pray a lot?
Oh, I say my prayers regularly. Oh, God, I do, yes.
How important is prayer to you?
Oh, well, it is. It is important. I believe that. Yeah. Oh, even though even though I was firmly excommunicated one time by the church, I never went away from it, you know.
Why were you?
Huh? Well, at the time, now, if you went to confession, if you didn't give an undertaking that you wouldn't be a Republican anymore, you got no absolution. Other priests, a lot of them very bitter.
Did you go into the confession box and he refused to give it to you?
Huh? Oh, you went into the confession box, but you were refused, you know, by a lot of them. We had an awful priest here in Kerry, Father Brennan. He was from Cafer Sabine. He was a rabbit fine Comney Gael man at the time. And he was a member of a select committee they had in Dublin. And there was two Kerrymen. One of them was Charlie Daly from Knockawn. He was executed up in Drumbow. He was 6 months in custody at the time they decided to execute himself and two others from the stole. And in the course of years anyway, the remains were handed over to the relatives to be reinterred. And Charlie Daly was brought to the chapel down here, Kiltana. And Father Brendan, he locked the church doors and he locked the gates. And the remains were taken into the chapel in Fighters. The priest in Fighters received them in outside parish. When they came to be buried in the family plot in Kildallan the same day here, the gates locked again. And the people pulled up the gates and threw him aside. And he was buried, and a man said the rosary over his grave. The priest was very bitter. Could be wrong. Yeah.
Then, how long? How many?
In the time. All at all times. The priests backed the establishment, no matter how bad the establishment was. And we had. we had. A bishop in Killarney, Bishop Moriarty, in the course of a sermon on Sunday morning in Killarney, he declared that eternity wasn't long enough, or hell wasn't hot enough for the Fenians. The Fenians were the soul of Ireland, you know, in the Finnish.
Then, in your 100 years, who was the greatest Irishman that you saw?
Well, I suppose there was quite a number of great Irishmen. Tom Maguire from Mayo was one. The Bradys, the Leakes, Larrantown. Great Irishmen, long had been great football men. You had men like that. And you had them. Some great men everywhere, you know.
Looking back now, Dan, through your 100 years, back through the decades, is it sad to look back? Do you think about the people? Do things pass through your mind and memory?
You see what's happening today, it's bad. Don't be future. Politics. This is a long time ago it happened. Bernard Shaw, I think it was, that was interviewed. And he was asked. It was surprising that he never entered politics. And he got offended. And he says, "Don't you know," he says, "that politics is the last refuge of a scoundrel."
Dan, do you listen to Radio Kerry?
Huh? Oh, I do. I do. Radio Kerry can be very good at times. Some very good stuff comes out of it, you know.
You like the matches in it?
Oh, yes. And then again, you have, they keep all the matches on Saturday and Sunday now, we carry radio. Oh, they can be very good. Because generally, you know, our tea is rotten, you know that.
And you were telling me there that you listen to Terrace Talk on Tuesday nights and Radio Kerry, my own program, Terrace Talk?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah, that's... All the games and everything, they're along to bring you back in them anyway, you know.
Well, Dan, I tell you, Dan, it was lovely talking to you, and thank you for welcoming me into your home. And we had a great chat. Of course, we could stay talking for ages and ages. So I suppose the next thing that will be happening is you'll be getting a check from the president for £100.
I won't. Just got it up and I tell you. That lady, I voted for her. God forgive me for doing it. Her selection was wrong, of course, but that's beside the point. But in her, when she was elected, in the course of her speech, she said her first priority was to walk down O'Connell Street with Queen Elizabeth. You heard that, didn't you? And her second priority was to do away with Room 21. She said, I said, that was a prompt from Bertie. And I believe that the day that the GEA allowed themselves to be manipulated by the any political party, it's wrong.
Dan, to finish up anyway, thanks again and a happy Christmas to you, and I hope you enjoyed the party share book.
Oh yeah, yes. I do, yes. But that's one thing. GEA always hated that, the four letter word, you know. That shouldn't be in it.
Dan Keating, as always, thanks for joining us in Terrace Talk. It was lovely talking to you.